the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Yelena, how are you, wonderful?
I'm really well.
Lovely. Thank you so much for coming in and visiting with me all the way from the UK. I have such an amazing following there in the United Kingdom, and I appreciate and value each and every one of you. Thank you for being here on the Edge with me and my brains. This is a place where the conversation is pointed. That's right. And the guests are sharp and the responses are never dull. And we drink from the cup. We drink from the well, as they say, the well of good wishes. There's so much going on in the world. And there look is. What I brought. I brought a superstar. And she really works with C-level and E-level executives. I mean, mid-level people that are stuck. Are you that person, Brains? Are you stuck and not knowing how to pivot or just how to settle in and adjust to this new environment all over the world? We're not talking about just in one place, the UK or the United States. We're talking about everywhere in the world. And she is so well-versed. I mean, she grew up in, was Serbia, mm-hmm. then moved to Japan, and now she's living in the UK. I want to ask her what it's like for women in business that are making those transitions, but not only women, but men as well. What do we need to know? You know, again, business is about making connections, making money, and repeating that cycle. Basically, that's what it is. Relationship capital and emotional intelligence. So help me welcome her to the Edge, and we're going to get into this pretty deep today because we have to if we're going to survive. Wouldn't you agree, Yelena?
Absolutely. And lovely, lovely to see you, April. Thank you for having me here. Hello Absolutely. From London, which unbelievably, it didn't rain today. So just one more reason to be happy. We don't have such nice weather like you have in California, I'm afraid.
I know.
But nevertheless, yeah, it's been a very interesting year. And I have indeed already helped many people in career transitions, even, or let's say, despite the pandemic and the lockdown. So very happy to talk to you about that.
Well, I mean, you know, people think for some reason, you know, because they're caught up in their feelings, and I get it. But they believe, or their psyche is leading them to believe, that everything has stopped and everything needs to be adjusted, and we need to shift. We need to scale. And we also need to be aware. We need to listen to what our customers are needing right now, not what they needed in January, because it'll never be that way again. What do they need right now to just survive, just to level out? We're not talking about scaling. We're not talking about making a whole lot of money. What do you suggest that they do right now to try to get comfortable and survive?
Right. Well, first of all, my work centers on mindset a lot, which I think is even more relevant, well, more relevant than ever in the crisis situation that we've been all facing for, you know, so many months. So when I talk to prospective clients and clients, there are a few things that I insist on. So it is open-mindedness and curiosity. And the ability to actually look inward as opposed to just outward, because we are being bombarded by a lot of negativity, news nonstop, all sorts of things, right? And we can then allow this to hijack our consciousness and even cloud our judgment around who we are, what we stand for, what's really important to us, and what it is that we want. And these are the things that I actually work on with my clients to help them remind themselves of who they are. If they were brilliant in the past and they achieved XYZ, who says that they won't be able to do that again? And take them from the place of fear into the place of abundance into the place of possibilities. So that's what I work on primarily, which is the mindset. But some of the key components would be open-mindedness, curiosity, and not sort of prejudging what's possible.
Right. I love the curiosity. I do, because that sparks the imagination. And without an idea or a thought or using your imagination, you're stuck. You know, the greatest visionaries. I mean, you look at Einstein. Brilliant. So how did you get to this point? Now, you've been doing this career coaching now for 4, maybe 5 years.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your history and your story. What took you to this point?
Sure. Well, I started my corporate career in Japan, and it was actually in recruitment. So at the time, it was the space of graduate and early careers recruitment. And at the time, it was very interesting for me to be engaged in that. And it carried a lot of meaning because I could see how I can help young people like myself get that first dream job, you know, when you just step out in the world and you see possibilities, or maybe there aren't that many, like it was for me at the time, coming back from an ex-socialist country. So, you know, you rely on your hard work and perseverance, and then eventually some doors start opening. So yes, my career took me to Japan. I worked in Tokyo for 4 years. And basically what I did a lot of campus marketing, and I ran careers events in Japan, US, and around Europe. And then I moved to London, and I worked for the same Japanese company for another 6 years, running their European operations. And then after that, I had a series of roles within the recruitment industry, almost always working with corporate clients, helping them identify and source top talent.
Let me ask you a question. You've traveled the world and you've been in some pretty tough countries. And I say that for a woman to be a trailblazer and to break through. Living in Serbia, you know, a socialist country. And see, Brains, you know nothing about that. For those of you that have traveled the world, you've had a taste of it. Maybe if you've been in the military, you've lived there for a while. But actually to grow up and be embedded in this philosophy, in this mindset, as you say, women are not considered equal. And you go to Japan, and that's totally different. Culture, language, lifestyle, food, everything. How have you been able to pivot is the first question. And the second question, women's roles in these countries, how have you been able to be a trailblazer and break through? Because it's not easy.
Sure. Thank you for these amazing questions, actually. I got to think about it a lot. Recently, I even took part in a panel, which is called Migrant Entrepreneur Show. And there was a panel, and there were 6 of us from all different corners of the world talking about how difficult it is if you're a migrant or just a foreigner, basically moving countries, and you know, how do you build yourself and what are the obstacles? So yes, I guess I had to go through a lot of changes. I guess adaptability is crucial in terms of really being able to pick up what's going on around you, what's important, and adapt to a certain extent, but on the other hand, not lose sight of your true self. I think that's the major challenge. Now, going back to Serbia, an ex-socialist country, at the time when I left, it was Yugoslavia, which then, due to civil war, which broke out just after I left, basically separated into 6 different countries. I have to say my growing up sort of period, childhood, adolescence was quite happy. I didn't experience any particular hardship. As for women, I think there was a relatively, I would say because of the region, geographical region, more than the sort of political apparatus, I think women were probably considered, like there was a bit of a macho culture, I'd say, okay. But on the whole, I didn't feel huge inequality. But when you talk about ingrained belief systems, there is something else, which is when you come from a socialist country, then, you know, you tend to ask yourself, okay, so these people who are making a lot of money, are they good people? You know, are they trustworthy? You know, so lots of beliefs and either from the educational systems, from parents, from the society. So you really have to be, I'd say, open-minded and driven and pursue your dream and start to see the truth for, you know, for what is the truth for you and what works for you, and start letting go of these prejudices and beliefs. Now, Japan was a totally different planet, dare I say. Yeah. I did go prepared. I thought I was prepared because I studied Japanese at university. I did English and Japanese, double major. So I read about the country, history, literature. I studied the language, and yet still nothing could prepare me fully. But it was a fascinating experience and I absolutely loved it. However, as a woman, I used to joke, I said I had three major handicaps. I'm a woman, I'm young, and I'm foreign. And in order to succeed in your career in Japan, I don't know what else can be worse to right. position you. But so what I did, I guess I relied a lot on my intuition. And as you mentioned, emotional intelligence. I'm good at connecting with people. I'm curious. I love learning about different cultures and, you know, habits and ways of thinking. So I think that helped me. But also, naturally, I'm really driven and hardworking. And I guess I became even more so in Japan, because they put you through the baptism of fire, really, in terms of corporate training.
And you know what? They require, well, I should say they require, they demand excellence.
They do. So that's true.
There is no second fiddle. You know, everybody is equal, but everybody better be on their A game.
Absolutely. You nailed it. So true.
Very, very polite. Very yeah. polite, but also very strict.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
If you do things that's not appropriate, there are consequences.
I just share one small anecdote? I just remembered something which I'd totally forgotten about. We had to clock in with whatever, employee cards, right? Because you're not allowed to be late. When trains are late in Tokyo, you get a certificate saying the train was late, because you can't be late, okay? And I think I may have been late 5 minutes on a couple of occasions, but not maybe twice in 6 months or something. Mm. And when the bonuses were given, I got this little slip and there was a deduction for something. And I couldn't figure out what it was. Why did they take the money away? Because my performance was really excellent. So I went to my director and I asked him, and he said, oh, this is nothing to do with me. This is HR. This is because you were late twice. So there you go.
See, that's what I'm talking about being disciplined. And you know what? I had to learn that. I've learned it within last 10 years, but I'm always a little bit early. There is something about being able to sit there and catch your breath and not having to watch your clock. But those trains in Japan, you know, they're stuffing them in there. You know, that is so cool to watch, Brains. You should watch it on YouTube. They have a person that just has a job just to stuff you in the train. You know, it's a lot of cultural differences. So now you're in the UK. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. And that experience.
Right. Well, I've been here for a long time now, 25 years. So I really consider this my home, I have to say. I'm a naturalized British citizen, have been for many years. And when I first came here from Japan, and obviously I had visited before many times, and I came here as a student and so on. But I have to say, in late 1994, after Tokyo, London was a sleepy village. I excuse myself for saying this, but that was really my impression. This was a big difference. But then anyway, I mean, I love this country. I love London. I love people and the culture and the humor and all sorts of things. And so I stayed here. My roots are here firmly planted. And I guess I don't really even see it anymore as a, you know, newcomer or external person. What I found some similarities, because I like to observe, like, culturally and socially and so on. I found some similarities between the UK and Japan being insular countries, which I thought was very interesting. because when you live on an island, you develop in certain ways, and people can't come and you know, occupy you unless they get on ships or come with planes. And
right.
Different. So there's, but also, you know, ways of thinking and so on. There are some similarities in terms of being insular nations or countries. However, the major difference is that Japan, for me at least, Japan is a very collective group type of thinking society, right. whereas British is very much like private and, you know, this is my space, this is my, you know, freedom. I can look whatever I want to look like, wear whatever I want to wear. I can behave in any which way, as long as, of course, I'm not a public nuisance.
Right.
And it's a lot more private. There's a big difference in terms of ways of operating.
And that's what I noticed too. And the Japanese are very forward thinking. I mean, they're thinking 5 years ahead, mm-hmm. 10 years, and they're acting on that. They're not waiting for something to happen, the other shoe to drop, or reactive, you know, trying to do damage control. They're already putting things in place, in motion, where more westernized cultures, the United States mm-hmm. and London, are like, oh, that happened? Well, let's, you know, find a vaccine instead of preventative medicine and try to prevent it from the get-go. So, I really admire that. As far as your clients, tell me, mm-hmm. shape your ideal client for me.
Mm-hmm. Right. My ideal client is a mid-career to senior professional, usually from the corporate world. I get quite a few of them from the consulting services, traditional banking and financial services, but also across media, energy sector, and so forth. So these people, I'd say, usually around between 40 and 55, roughly, even though I'm not an ageist person in any sense. So, you know, age is not important in that sense. It's more around...
Oh, yes, it is. Because let me tell you, I don't care what anybody says, wisdom comes with age. A 20-year-old cannot tell me what's going on in the corporate world. They might be able to tell me what's in the future. But so I understand what you're saying. You don't want to pigeonhole yourself and say, I'm only working with this or that. But please, age is valuable. And that's one thing that we don't respect in the workplace. I'm sorry to interject, but I had to hit it while the iron was hot, is that they don't appreciate that. And I was at an HR seminar back when I could interact with people, and they really wanted to tap into the more senior people because the millennials have a different way of processing things.
Yeah.
You have to tell them what to do. They're not like your upbringing or my upbringing is where, okay, this is your chores, this is your responsibility, or when you work with the Japanese, this is what we want you to do, and we want you to get this done. Whatever it takes to get it done, if you're within that framework. But millennials don't have that. So again, age and wisdom is very valuable, and so many people now are aged out of great opportunities.
That is true.
40, well, not even 40. You're talking about 50, 55, 60. They don't even know how to apply for a job. They have to be an entrepreneur if they're going to generate the kind of money they want, because people are looking at that number.
Absolutely. And I see that happening a lot. You're completely right. When I said I'm not exclusive about age, I meant like, it's not like I refuse someone if they're 39. I had a lady client recently who was a managing director of a startup. So, you know, a really high flyer. And in terms of what people experience in their careers, that's the bit that is important to me. But I'd say essentially it's 40 plus to 55 or so. In terms of career transitions, it is true. More and more people are looking to set up on their own, to venture into solopreneurship or entrepreneurship, because they've had enough of whatever they were doing before, or because simply they don't see options and there aren't that many options. I had a client, a lady, who was made redundant after 27 years in one organization. And she came to me very dejected and thinking, you know, what can I do next and so forth. And I supported her and pushed her really to start her own business. And she has very specific skills in specialist teaching, working with specialist teachers, but also helping, educating parents how to deal with children with dyslexia and so forth. But she's a true expert in her field. So she just emailed me literally a couple of weeks ago, and we finished coaching in February. So it's a while, but she's been progressing. And she said, to date, I trained 2,000 people from 13 countries on my program. And I was like, yes. And that made me so happy. And, you know, when I see my clients' results, and at first she was quite, not just scared, but reluctant to, you know, use social media and get out there. But you have to get out there to promote yourself, actually, equally, whether you're starting your own business or you just want to attract good attention from potential employers and recruiters. Right. Speaking mostly about LinkedIn, really, but yes, other platforms as well.
LinkedIn is a very unique platform. There is a lot of E-level and C-level and a lot of subject matter experts, you know, so you really have to position yourself. It's not a Facebook, brains, okay? It's not a LinkedIn, it's not a Twitter. You really need to have your conversation correct, what you want to deliver, how you want to market yourself, how you want your visibility, your logo, all of that. I mean, because these people are sharp. And they are from all over the world, and they are looking for that. And they're looking to do business. They're not just looking to connect and chat. They're looking to, you know, and it's not always dollars. Dollars is not always the business. Sometimes it's the connection. Sometimes dollars can get in the way. But it's very important. Do you work with a lot of men?
I work with men as well. Yes, I work. I'd say probably I have more women clients than men. But I haven't looked at the specific percentage, but I do work with men. I think the reason could be that I don't want to generalize, but I find that men are more reluctant to ask for help, or whatever they see as asking for help, because there's still this ingrained way of thinking that, you know, I'm a man, I can do it, I need to figure it out by myself, I will first try this X, Y, and Z before I come to you. But then when they start working with me, they love it. And of course, they get great results. Another ideal client, actually, this is my ideal client, is someone I featured on LinkedIn as well recently, because I posted his video where he talked about his career trajectory. He worked for a big consultancy firm, but he just wasn't fulfilled. And I'd say this is one of the most important bits that I look for in my prospective clients. People who really want to change, who want a better work-life balance, but also more fulfillment in terms of seeing the impact of what they do and being more fired up with their work. So anyhow, he landed a role at Amazon during coaching with me, had a phenomenal offer, huge increase in package, like 67%. Wow. So he jumped on that role. And from there onwards, it's been very successful. However, he continued to work with me because in the next 2 years, he'd like to launch his own consultancy or a startup, more likely. So we're still working together and kind of bouncing ideas around that.
And the reason why I asked you, you know, do you work with men, is that women are taking over the planet. Okay. I don't know if everybody got the email, but we are, and it is time for us to not have a seat at the table, but to be the head of the table. But with that, we still have to work in conjunction with our counterparts, which are men. And so we need to be able to facilitate a smooth transition so that we work harmoniously. We don't want to boss you around. We don't want to make you feel bad or feel guilty. You know, we want to be your equal in the workplace. We want to get the same pay in the workplace. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be judged because we have to take off because our children are sick in the workplace. You know, and it's very, very difficult. And it's going to be hard for men too, to make the adjustment to, you know, again, take orders from this woman. But we're not tyrants. We're not. We're there to learn. And so it's good. I really like that you're able to, you know, bounce that off, because I talk to so many of my guests and they say, I work only with women. And it's kind of disheartening in a way, because it makes it seem like women still need the work to do. And, you know, there's a lot of challenges out there, but it is, there's countries now. I mean, look at America. We have the first woman vice president. I don't know why it's taking so long. You know, there's women that are running countries, but you get there when you get there, and you appreciate it. And I appreciate you and all that you do. Please tell my brains, do you have any upcoming programs, online services that you'd like to feature right now, and how to get in contact with you, Yelena?
Sure, absolutely. I just wanted to round up on what you were saying. I totally agree with you. I think we're at the brink of a new era, but I think essentially women will be the ones who will build this world of more equal opportunities and working together and real partnership and collaboration. I love the idea of partnership and collaboration. And recently, just this year, I read both Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In, as well as Melinda Gates' The Moment of Lift.
Yes.
And they were fantastic, amazing books. Talking, really going into in depth about partnership, equality, the position of men and women from different spectrums, from corporate women to, you know, women in the poorest parts of the world. But it was, I found both books really inspiring and very uplifting, and looking at how the corporate world is transforming and what my clients are telling me, because I learn from my clients as well, which is wonderful. Yes. I think we're definitely moving towards a more equitable place, workplace, and true partnership. I really believe that, both in terms of gender and race and, you know, any orientation. And I think more and more people are starting to realize that we really are one, no matter what our ego is telling us. This is my deep belief as well.
Exactly. I share in that belief. I do, because, you know, we can't, what did my mother always say? If you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you always got.
Exactly. And it's time for change. Everything is telling us that time is there for change. So both macro and micro level. So just to link up to your question, actually, yes, I am relaunching my group program, Career Transitions Made Easy, in January. I already ran three cohorts, and the program has been very successful. I've actually had participants, I had coaching clients from the US, so it's not just for people in Europe or European time zone. I get clients from India and US and all over Europe, and from Asia actually as well, like China and Japan. So it's open to everyone, and I'd very happily share the details for those who want to reach out to me. My website,
we'll put that at the bottom as well.
Yes, my website is whatwork.co.uk. That's fairly simple to find, and I chose the name What Work because that's essentially what I do. I help people identify what is meaningful work for them. And that's why I use that word. So it's not a job, it's not a career, it's not a business, it's very simply work, our lives work.
And, you know, brains, you have to enjoy what you do. That is the bottom line. If you enjoy what you do, if that's making widgets, if that is, you know, babysitting, if that is being the CEO of a major corporation, a flight attendant, a pilot, you have to love what you do, because then you're going to pour 100% into it. And that mindset is going to be right. And you're always going to be seeking out people to develop that mindset. It's not just one, it's not cookie cutter. It's not just one design. It is ever evolving. And there's a lot of responsibility with that. There's a lot of accountability, like the Japanese want you to be on time. And timing is everything. And I am so glad that you are here with us, Yelena. You are brilliant. There's something I want to talk to you about offline, connect you with some other great thought leaders, because again, We are on a whole different level. We are going to a whole different universe. And we have to take our mind and our body and our spirit with us, but we have to stay in business. And you are the business. So thank you so much for being here on The Edge. Here's to you, my new friend.
Thank you so much. It's my honor and pleasure. I really enjoyed it. And cheers to you, April.
All right. Friends, go and subscribe. I'm going to put all of Yelena's information down at the bottom. Check her out, okay? It costs you nothing to be curious. And everything you can gain from sparking your imagination here on The Edge. Thank you so much. Wonderful. And we will be connecting really, really soon. Okay?